Good morning. It is time to get up with Cam Newton. The league is sending him a message. Is he willing to listen to it? We'll tell you what it is coming up. Plus, I will explain why this is going to be the most important season of Bill Belichick's career. I've got the numbers. They're going to surprise you. And then, the man who landed the biggest free agent in NFL history will explain exactly how he pulled it off. Live as we get up with you, starting right now. From Bristol on a Monday, I'm Mike Greenberg, and I thank you so much for getting up with all of us here at ESPN. Coming off what was a reasonably busy weekend, we hope that you are all safe and sound. And as I have said repeatedly and will, we'll be here with you every single morning. We're going to get through this together as sports fans. And we're going to start with Get Up and Go, some of the big news around the world of sports. And actually, we have this just in to our newsroom. The International Olympic Committee has rescheduled the Tokyo Olympics for next summer. The opening ceremony is now set for July 23rd of 2021. Olympic officials have confirmed that all of the approximately 6,200 athletes who qualified this year will keep their spots for 2021. So chalk that up to doing the best you can in a bad situation. Elsewhere, good news from the NBA. Celtics guard Marcus Smart announced Sunday night on social media he has been cleared by the Massachusetts Department of Health. He had tested positive for COVID-19 2 weeks ago. Meanwhile, it was announced on Saturday that the owner of the Knicks and Rangers, James Dolan, tested positive for the coronavirus. In a statement, the Madison Square Garden company said the 64-year-old Dolan has been in self-isolation and is experiencing little to no symptoms. And then to the NFL, where Cam Newton remains arguably the biggest name left in free agency, along with Jameis Winston. For Newton, the question is if he's healthy. The 2015 MVP has tried to answer that by posting multiple videos of himself working out and throwing on Instagram. And it certainly seems that one possible landing spot for Cam Newton is in Los Angeles with the Chargers, which made this photo recently posted by Tyrod Taylor of the two quarterbacks working out together so interesting, because right now Taylor is atop the Chargers quarterback depth chart. And we will start this morning with Dan Graziano, our NFL insider extraordinaire. Dan, what can you tell us about Cam Newton's free agent status right this minute?
Well, right now it's still too early for anyone to know anything definitive about where Cam Newton might end up. He was just released at the end of last week. We know nobody wanted to trade for him, take on that $19 million salary in addition to giving up draft picks, so he's freshly on the market. And it's a market where you can't bring in a free agent and examine him medically. And this is a player that missed almost all of last season with a foot injury, that had shoulder surgery two off seasons ago. So teams are going to want to see him. It could take a while before we find a place for Cam Newton to settle. The Chargers make a lot of sense. Obviously, they say they're all in on Tyrod Taylor for right now, but that doesn't mean they will be all summer. But it could take a while before someone can get Cam Newton into their building and examine him and decide whether it's worth taking a shot on signing him.
Yes, that's a point about the timing in all of this. And it takes us back to what Stephen A. Smith said on this show last week, that the Panthers, whether you agree or disagree with this notion, that the Panthers screwed him by waiting as long as they did to let him go, because all of these openings have pretty much since been filled. I also have with me this morning Dan Orlovsky and Marcus Spears. Delighted to see both of you guys. They will hope you had a great weekend. And Dan Orlovsky, I will start with you. As you listen to what Dan Graziano just told us, where do you feel like we stand right now with Cam Newton?
Yeah, Greeny, the NFL is sending Cam Newton and, for the same reality, Jameis Winston, a very clear message that they do not see them. The NFL does not see them as week one starters this season. And that might be difficult for me to comprehend, and that might be difficult for you to comprehend and fans to comprehend, and it's probably difficult for Cam Newton to comprehend as well, but that doesn't matter. The reality is the NFL is sending Cam a very clear message that right now they don't see him as a week one starter, and that's hard for me to wrap my head around, the fact that a guy who was playing so well in 2018 is not viewed that way. But I think the reality is, if the Chargers were going to make a move on Cam, it would have already happened, and he might have to wait till after the draft to see how many seats are left for him to go be a part of a team.
Marcus, let me ask you, and I'm going to ask you to guess here, but just to go back to what Stephen A. said about how the timing really was, in Stephen A.'s view, unfair to Cam based upon the totality of the circumstances. If Cam Newton had been released weeks ago, do you think an NFL team would have brought him in as their starting quarterback?
Absolutely. Gee, it's the physical. Listen, Cam, first of all, to find out if he's healthy or not, we've lamented over the fact that if Cam is healthy, he's a starter in this league somewhere because of what he's done in this league. And then you think about his ability to add to whatever you want to do offensively, especially if you want a guy that can move around. Cam's issue has been the shoulder and obviously the foot last year. But outside of that, it's just terrible timing, G. That's really what this boils down to for Cam Newton. Now, Jameis Winston, that's a different situation because that's the ability to keep the ball on your side of the field and not throw have turnovers. I firmly believe with Cam Newton, if he was able to go through the process that you usually go through as a free agent to put yourself in position for teams to see you, lock in, understand the medical, see everything that's transpired from the time you had your surgery to now, someone would have him as a starter. And I think it would be the LA Chargers, because if they were so sold on Tyrod Taylor, the way Phillip Rivers played last year, Tyrod Taylor should have absolutely been in the game at some point during the season.
Yeah, Dan Orlovsky, I agree with all of that, to be honest with you. One way or another, it's about the health. And that's what's really hurting Cam here. Because to pick up on what Marcus just said, he's not a starting quarterback, Cam Newton, in the NFL, if healthy. He's an elite quarterback in the NFL. This is a guy who is to the point we have made repeatedly here. A year and a half ago, he was playing MVP caliber football. It's all about the medicals. And Orlovsky, we won't know this. Some team is going to have to, I would assume, fly blind and take a shot at this at very little money. And they may wind up striking gold.
Yeah, I mean, the reality is they've got to sit down with Cam Newton and figure out what his expectations are, Greeny, right? Like, is Cam looking for a 2-3 year deal worth $10+ million a year? Or is he willing to take a 1 year deal in a reasonable salary? I think everyone needs to understand, too, because when we talk about Cam Newton, one of the things that is often said is about the hits, right? And those are valid comments. But his injury was not from a being beat up type of thing or being worn down type of thing. It was a shot on his shoulder that would have happened to any other quarterback. And so I think that's important to point out that injury was a freak injury, not one that was because of all the residual contact he's had over his years.
All right, let's wait and see where all of that nets out. It feels like it's going to be a little while before Cam Newton finds a home. Meanwhile, we have another story from the NFL. Playoff expansion appears to be right around the corner. This week, league owners are expected to vote on a proposal that would add one more team from each conference to the playoffs, increasing the field to 14 total. Again, there are currently 12 teams that make the playoffs, and it's been that way for 20 years. And this would add one team in either conference and mean that only one team in each conference would wind up getting a bye. Graziano, let me come back to you, because I think a lot of us believed that with the passing of the new CBA, this was baked in, that this was already done. What can you tell us about this?
Yeah, it's actually not specified in the new CBA other than a reference to how the salary cap would be calculated in any season with expanded playoffs. But remember, the owners were supposed to be gathered with GMs and coaches right now in Palm Beach for their annual league meeting. That meeting was canceled a couple of weeks ago for the same reason everything else in sports has been canceled. But the owners are going to be having conference calls today and tomorrow to discuss some of the issues that would have been discussed and voted on at that meeting. And I expect either today or tomorrow, more likely tomorrow, that they will vote to expand the playoff field this year. They have to have some discussions about how that'll work, when the games would be played, which TV networks air them, etc. But I think there will be a vote taken today or tomorrow, most likely tomorrow, that results in an expanded playoff field by one team per conference as early as this season.
And let me quickly, before I turn it over to the fellows, go to you. How if we're going to go to 14, how far are we away, do you think, from a reality where we will eventually see 16, where there will be 8 teams in each conference and no buys in the playoffs?
Well, there are a lot of people that expect that to happen eventually, if for no other reason than the bye week teams have a strong advantage statistically in terms of who makes the Super Bowl. And now you have only one bye team per conference. If that advantage holds and no one other than the one seed can get to the Super Bowl in the next couple of years, you may see the league reevaluate and go to a further expanded playoffs where no one gets a bye. I think that's an expectation a lot of people have over the coming years.
All right, let me get the guys back in here. And Marcus, this time I will start with you. Do you like the idea of adding more teams to the playoffs?
I like the 14 teams. That 16 team one, I hate it. I feel like you earn a bye throughout the season. That's just the football player in me. But going back to this, adding one more game, I love the fact that they're doing this, and it's a possibility to have the playoffs start with a lower seed team and the one team having a bye week, because teams get hot. Gee, we saw the Titans do it last year. We saw a 9-7 Giants team go on to beat the New England Patriots in the Super Bowl. The playoffs are about who's peaking at the right time. And all the time in sports, that really doesn't, it really doesn't tell you based on a regular season who the best teams end up being when you get to that point in the playoffs. So I think it just makes it more exciting. I think teams that are 8-8 possibly going into that thing that's finally hitting their stride can obviously get to the Super Bowl. I like the idea of it.
Why do you think, Orlovsky?
I don't like it, Greeny. Why don't we just have every team in the playoffs and we'll turn it into the Royal Rumble where everyone gets a shot? I've been on teams that were like fringe playoff teams. And if I'm just keeping it real, like I knew, like if we got to the playoffs and we played as good as we possibly could and the team that we were playing didn't play well, we might get a win or something and advance to the next round. I think there's an unintended consequence here too. Like if we move to 14 teams getting into the playoffs, and to Graziano's point, there's only one team gaining the bye. People need to realize that the NFL regular season, Marcus, you know this, is a bloodbath. And even if you go, like, imagine the San Francisco 49ers going 14-2. And then the New Orleans Saints going 13-3. Neither was easy to get to, but the New Orleans Saints get the 2 seed. Now they don't get that bye. That bye, not getting that bye, is so detrimental to them making their championship run because of the age of their quarterback and really their football team. And there's going to be an unintended consequence where we're going to lose on championship runs because those teams that kind of earned that bye don't get it anymore. And so I don't like it.
You know, Marcus, he's cutting to the core, really, of the debate here, which is, do you like the idea of a team that did not have a great year but got hot at the end and sneaks in having the same chance to win the championship that the team that was the best team in the league all year long does? I happen to land on the other side of that. I've said for years on my old show and on this one, the NCAA tournament, which we're currently in the middle of missing, is the best sporting event we have all year long. But it's the worst possible way to choose a champion for an entire season because there's just too much of a randomness to it and it renders the entire regular season basically irrelevant. And that would be my concern, Marcus, if we decide to put half the teams in the NFL into the playoffs.
Gee, don't compare it to that. This is absolutely different. First of all, because it's the NFL and you're dealing with only 32 of them. And then the second thing is this. When you look at the playoffs sometimes, wasn't it Carolina that got in at 7-9 one year or something like that? They won the division, but didn't win a majority of their games. I could be wrong. And that is a part of what football is. That's what we love about the NCAA tournament, is that Chicago Loyola could get into the Elite Eight or the Sweet 16. The NFL is adding one team possibly to getting into the playoffs and making a run. That would be crazy exciting for people. I think right now, just talking about it, people can't envision it.
By the way, if they went to 8 teams last year in each conference, the 7-9 Broncos would have gotten in. As we continue here on Get Up This Morning, Tom Brady is no longer a Patriot, but someone close to him says we shouldn't call it a divorce. You'll hear who it was and why he said it coming up. But first, I just mentioned the NCAA tournament. Right now, the Final Four would have been set over this past weekend. So our sneaky Hembo question this morning is this. Which men's program has the record for most Final Four appearances? Sounds easy, but it's not. The answer's next. Get Up on ESPN.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So at GEICO, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now it's our turn to share with the GEICO Give Back. A 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters, featuring three advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
We're back on Get Up, and it's time for Sneaky Himbo. And here to answer today's question, which is a basketball question, is our NBA insider extraordinaire, Brian Windhorst. Windy, right now, if the world were in a normal place, we would have narrowed down the NCAA tournament to the final four teams. So the question is, which men's program has the record for most final four appearances?
Well, look, it's not UCLA because Hembo is sneaky. And it's not Duke because before Krzyzewski, they weren't anything. So in my mind, I'm showing you my work here. It's North Carolina or Kentucky. I think Kentucky, Adolph Rupp, his history. I know they were around in doing stuff in the 50s, 60s. So I'm going Kentucky.
Oh, it was North Carolina. You were that close. You narrowed it down, by the way, to the right four teams. North Carolina is the answer with 20 appearances.
Oh, really?
UCLA, 18. Kentucky, 17. And Duke, 16. So you had the right four schools, didn't get the right one. As Hembo would say, that doesn't count.
Partial credit.
Next up, it is day 19 of the NBA hiatus as the U.S. continues, of course, to battle the COVID-19 pandemic. And the NBA is continuing their efforts on restarting the league, and owner Mark Cuban of the Mavericks said last week he was hopeful to get the league back by mid-May. And so this is why we wanted Windy with us here today, because I don't feel like anyone has had better perspective on this thing from even before it began than you have, Windy. And so what is the latest you are hearing about how and when the league can resume play?
Yeah, they're having conversations at the ownership level about what to do here, but they have no timeline, of course. The reality is, and I know that I started talking about this over the weekend, and I got a lot of pushback, Greeny, but I have to talk about reality. The reality is that not only when it comes back, is there not going to be any fans, but there's a decent chance that they're going to have to look at centralizing teams. It is what the Chinese are doing with their league, and they're facing a four-month delay to get it done. Over the weekend, the Premier League, there were reports out of England that the Premier League, you know, the leading league in the world for soccer, is thinking about doing the exact same things in the Midlands in England, basically out in the rural areas. And I think this is what the NBA is going to have to seriously look at is centralized locations. LeBron shot down the concept of this idea last week. Other players that I have talked to don't like it, but it is what the reality is. The hard thing, the number one thing, is to get the players protected and to keep them healthy, and you can't travel to do it, and you've got to create like a tunnel for them to stay in, and that's why I think it's going to have to be, maybe not at one place, but it may be a couple centralized locations.
Let's be real specific about what we're talking about. And every time I've had you on, I've made this same remark. We can't tell you what's going to happen in the future. We can, however, tell you what's happened in the past. And you are telling us this is what they had to do in China with basketball. This is what they're doing in England with the Premier League, a soccer league that is every bit as big and significant as the NBA is here. That they are basically clustering all of the teams in a small place. Everyone is coming to the same one small place, and they will play it out there. That's what we're talking about here.
Well, in China, it's two different cities, 10 teams in each city, but it's comparable because China's a huge country. They have 20 teams. In England, they're talking about it. But yes, and by the way, to get this done, to have temperature checks on the players every single day, to put them basically in a hotel, where there's, the important thing here, Greeny, there's no players association in China. That would have to be negotiated with the NBA. The Chinese can just implement it and say, you want to be in the league? Report to this location and we're going to put you in a hotel. It would be more complicated for the NBA. But even the Chinese haven't been able to get it done yet. And they keep delaying it and delaying it. But this is the route they're going. And it's going to take the Chinese 3.5 months. And maybe the U.S., if we do okay as a country and get healthier, maybe we can cut it down a little bit. But I still think it's going to be months and months, and it's going to be centralized when it comes back. The Chinese are hoping that they can play the rest of their regular season and then bring fans back in, that by June in China, it will be in a position that they can do that. Hopefully, that's something the NBA could do. But in the initial phases of this,
centralized locations in a bubble is what all the top leagues are looking at. The NBA is on that list.
You mentioned that the players don't like this idea, and it's easy to understand why they wouldn't like it, to be taken away from their families and everyone they care about during this extraordinary time. It's easy to see why someone would be opposed to that. However, if indeed it comes down to this is the only option to play any semblance of a season here, provide that entertainment for people, and preserve whatever percentage of the money would still be available, I know I'm asking you to guess. Is your sense that the players ultimately would do it?
Well, this is where LeBron's voice matters so much, because LeBron has said he doesn't want to play in front, not outside the presence of fans, and he doesn't want to go to a sequestered situation. Does LeBron want to play to try to win a title this year? That's the bottom line. And yes, it's about money, but it's also about those teams at the top trying to play for that title. And there's going to have to be some negotiation, Greeny, here between the owners and the players. Now, the MLB just got this done. They have not started in the NBA yet, but there's going to be a fight over money very soon. And these topics are going to come to the forefront, and I expect it to get dicey.
All right. That's really well done. Brian Windhorst, thank you very much, and we'll continue to lean on you for all of this insight as we continue. Again, if it's 3.5 months, you're talking about July, if you go back to when the NBA shut down. As we continue here on Get Up, Tom Brady has won 6 Super Bowls, all of them with Bill Belichick. So who needs to win more now that they're apart? I'll tell you why the answer is obvious. X.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So at GEICO, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now it's our turn to share with the GEICO Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
Back on Get Up, and after 20 seasons together in New England, some have referred to the split between Tom Brady and Bill Belichick as a divorce. Well, Brady's father was a recent guest on Dell and Sonia Curry's podcast, and Tom Sr. was not ready to go that far. He said, quote, "I think it's just change. I don't know that it's a divorce. 20 years together is a long time. I can't tell you the hundreds of times Tommy has said Bill is the best coach in football. Tommy sings Bill's praises. Divorce sounds a little bit harsh." It is probably the most asked question in the NFL over the last 2 decades. Is it Brady or is it Bill? Who is most responsible for the unprecedented run of success the Patriots have enjoyed over 20 years? Maybe this year we will finally find out. Meanwhile, it seems worth reminding you that while there is no way to evaluate Brady without Bill, because it has never happened, there is plenty of data to evaluate Bill without Brady. And for whatever it's worth, it's not a pretty picture. Bill Belichick coached exactly 100 games before Tom Brady's first start. He was 42-58. Most of that was in Cleveland, where he took over a Browns team that had made the playoffs 5 out of 6 years. He coached them 5 seasons. He had losing records in 4. By the way, Nick Saban was his defensive coordinator 4 of those 5 seasons. And yes, the ending was a terrible situation. The team planning to relocate to Baltimore. Factor that in however you like. Then he went to New England. Belichick was 5-13 with Drew Bledsoe, #1 overall draft pick, at quarterback. Then Brady took over. In his first start, he beat Peyton Manning and the Colts by 31 points as a double-digit underdog. He then went 13-3 the rest of the way and won the Super Bowl. Brady went on to average 28 points a game as a starter over his Patriots career. That is the most by any quarterback ever. In games started by anyone else, Belichick's teams have averaged 19 points. Brady also won 6 playoff games in which his team allowed 28 or more points. No other quarterback has ever won more than 2. And Brady made himself a salary cap bargain. In none of his championship seasons was Brady a top 10 cap hit in the league. So what does all of this mean? Certainly doesn't necessarily take anything away from Belichick as a coach. I believe he is the greatest in the history of American team sports. But the facts are the facts. So if he is ever going to accomplish anything without Tom Brady, he's going to have to start doing it now. That's what I say and what the numbers say. Let's see what my guys say. Marcus Swagoo Spears, I give you the first crack at this. What do you think?
First of all, the damn down barrels are the greatest thing on this show, man. That's #1. The second thing is this, man. Greeny, you can't point out a great coach or a coach that we think is the GOAT per se without one of the players being the GOAT. Look at all of the relationships over the history of sports. Phil Jackson, Michael Jordan, Phil Jackson, Kobe Bryant. We look at, we look in college. We look at John Wooden with, Lou Alcindor, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar known as. We look at all of these greats, Steve Walsh, Joe Montana. It is a correlation. You have to have the guys that can execute whatever plan you're giving them and even sometimes overcome when the plan is not all that great. It, like to your point, it does not take away from Bill Belichick being arguably the greatest coach of all time. But find me a marriage in the history of team sports where we've mentioned the coach being the greatest of all time without a player on that team being the greatest of all time or top one or two in whatever job they're doing, and you can prove me wrong. But until I don't see it, I've never seen it, not to take anything away from any coach that's ever done great things.
Go ahead,
Tom
Dan.
Tom Brady is one of those guys where you will be mentioned as greatest of all time.
Yeah, Marcus, you're wrong. Greeny, during the commercial break, you had said, this down barrel is fire. And out of respect, I was like, man, Greeny, you've had some good down barrels. And that was the best one ever. I mean, two things stood out to me. I did not know that the 5 years previous to Bill Belichick becoming the head coach of the Browns, they went to the playoffs 4 out of 5 seasons.
Five out of six.
Surprising to me. Five out of six, I'm sorry. And then the second thing was the fact that Brady has averaged more points as a starting quarterback than anyone else. And he had 6 wins when his defense gave up 28 points in the playoffs or more. Like, those are some startling numbers to me that really encapsulate an argument. And really, I mean, I'm trying to be dead serious here. Like, I kind of leaned towards Brady for a while now, but hearing the reality of these numbers and you can't run from some of these things, it only pounds home, you know, pounds the point to me that this is a Brady-driven thing, and that was the best down barrel that you've ever done.
Yeah.
And I think it's
going to
make a lot of people really angry in New England. Marcus, you're wrong.
Go ahead, Marcus.
How do you get them dead wrong? I just sat here and gave you a soliloquy about if you're going to be mentioned as the greatest coach of all time, 9 times out of 10, you had the best player either of that era or all of all time.
Here's the thing, though. In no other sport, and maybe this is because we correctly believe that the coach is more important in football than it is in any other sport. But in no other sport do we say, you know, was it Michael or was it Phil? Was it Kobe or was it Phil? Was it Duncan or was it Pop? Was it Auerbach or was it Bill Russell? We always say, of course it was the player. The coach, there's no doubt, Phil Jackson was a major contributor to the Bulls winning all those championships. But Michael Jordan was the reason that they won them. Only in football do we wonder this aloud. And I just thought it was worth spelling out all of the ways in which Brady changed everything.
Gee, it's always the player. I'm with Dan, it's always my point in saying if you are mentioned as the greatest coach of all time, by and large, you have the greatest player of all time or one of the most generational game-changing players in the history of the game. There's someone, I'm going to leave it alone after this. Somebody has to execute. Somebody has to go out there on their field to play and execute at a high, high level if you're going to be mentioned as the greatest coach of all time.
We will bring this back.
Marcus, the point of the down barrel, the point of the down barrel is to prove that since there was that execution, maybe that coach is viewed differently than he would have been without it. Like, that's the point of the down barrel, dude, is to realize
everyone
the player executed it.
And I have to leave it here.
Lever.
We will come back to this. I don't understand exactly how it is. We are all agreeing, and yet we're arguing with each other. We'll come back and we'll discuss this a little further a little later. We'll bring it up with Stephen A. as well. And I can tell you that we're bringing back some of the greatest Monday Night Football games ever tonight. We'll start with this 2018 record breaker, Mahomes and the Chiefs, Goff and the Rams. It was a classic. There were quite a few points scored, if you remember that game. And you'll see it tonight, 8 Eastern, on ESPN and on the ESPN app. Meanwhile, in baseball, even with the recent deal between Major League Baseball and the Players Association, the big questions remain of when and how the league is going to start its season. The president of the Players Association is Tony Clark. He recently said the players would be open to playing in neutral sites if that's what it took to get back on the field. Here's what he said, quote, "Players want to play. That's what we do. Being able to get back on the field and being able to play, even if that means their fans are watching at home. We would play as long as we possibly could. Obviously, the weather becomes a challenge the later you get in the calendar year, but we would do our best to play as many as possible, regardless of when we start. The opportunity to play in neutral sites is something both sides are willing to discuss." So that is a lot on the table for our Mark Teixeira. Tex, great to see you, as always. What do you think of that? Let's start with neutral sites, playing the postseason, the World Series, and all of that in domes or in warm weather cities. What would you think of that?
Well, Tony Clark, the mouthpiece for the players, said it best. They'll play anywhere. Players will play in Timbuktu if you make a game there, because it's all about getting as many games as possible for these players. These guys are used to playing in spring training and, you know, other places. It won't be a big deal for them to play neutral games. But the fact of the matter is, the execution of these neutral sites will be very interesting. When does it start? Does it start, you know, early, you know, mid-November? Where exactly are the neutral sites? And I guarantee you there's going to be fights between different stadium owners and team owners about how do you split this revenue. So the questions are going to be, how do you execute the neutral sites late in the season?
The other piece of this that gets interesting is the idea of a lot of doubleheaders during the season, and it was even floated the notion that maybe you would play seven-inning doubleheaders. I know when we spoke last week, you were vehemently opposed to these concepts. Is your mind starting to change?
My mind is changing because I've talked to a few executives in Major League Baseball, and they said, sorry, Tex, this is going to happen. We have to squeeze the games in here. And for me, it's all about, you know, the competition, you know, putting players at risk. Guys are going to be playing way too many games in shortened amount of time. But the players have already said, listen, we are up to anything. We will play the extra games. We will play doubleheaders. And so what I would say is the only way that you can execute that is making sure that the players are protected. Play seven-inning games if you're going to do doubleheaders. And also, don't play extra innings. After the 10th inning, the game is over, because the worst thing you can have is have a doubleheader with one of those games going 11, 12 innings, you know, and then the next day you play another nine. So we have to be very careful how much stress we're putting on these players. I think seven-inning games and limiting extra innings will help that.
Now, limiting extra innings is something that I actually campaigned for on my old show on Mike and Mike. I said back in at that time that after 12 innings, the game should just be over. These 19-inning games just they create a whole lot more problems than they are exciting for anybody. What is your thought? You're suggesting 10 innings here in a 7-inning game. What do you think, and is that something you think they should take with them whenever it is we come out of this and go back to some normalcy?
Yeah, it's a good idea, Greeny. I'm a traditionalist by nature, and that's why the seven-inning game just kind of blew my mind. But as you think about what you actually have to do to protect these players and get these games moving, extra-inning games get really boring. They can get really long. They can mess up a pitching staff for weeks. And so forget about just the doubleheaders. I think the regular season, you should have games end after 10 innings. And Major League Baseball can really think about this in the next season and beyond, because this is a small way to help the rosters, make sure you're not burning too many pitchers, and also keep the game moving.
I totally agree. And you see Hembo popped it up on the screen. It would basically mean about 5% of the game, so maybe one per team per month, might end in a tie. To me, that would not be the end of the world. Tex, great to see you. We'll check in again as the week continues. Meanwhile, tomorrow, we'll take a look back at one of the most unforgettable games ever. Braves-Mets, September 21st, 2001 at Shea. The first regular season professional sporting event in New York after the 9/11 attacks. Spoiler alert, Mike Piazza plays a big role in the outcome. 7 Eastern on ESPN and the ESPN app. All right, coming up, we asked the man who engineered bringing Tom Brady to Tampa how they did it, how they landed the biggest free agent ever. We'll ask him as he joins us live right after this. It's Get Up on ESPN.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So, at GEICO, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star.
Now, it's our turn to share with the GEICO Giveback, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
Well, we are back on Get Up, and to say the very least, it has been a busy offseason for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Of course, at the top of the list, they signed Tom Brady to a 2-year, $50 million guaranteed contract, the richest contract in terms of average per year that Brady has ever signed in his career. But that's not all they did. The Bucs also found a way to keep several key players on defense, including placing the franchise tag on linebacker Shaq Barrett, who led the NFL with 19.5 sacks last year. And Tampa also re-signed linebacker Jason Pierre-Paul to a 2-year, $27 million deal. And then last week re-signed defensive tackle Ndamukong Suh to a 1-year deal worth $8 million. So, all that added up, as Tampa looks to break a 12-season drought of missing the playoffs, which is the second longest active streak in the league, our friends at Caesars Sportsbook in Vegas think they have an excellent chance, giving them the second best odds to win their division behind only the New Orleans Saints. And for more, let's bring in man who pulled it off. This is the Buccaneers general manager, Jason Light. And Jason, thank you very much for doing this. I'll just ask you as simply as I can. How did your team land the most accomplished free agent in NFL history?
Well, you know, I'm asking myself the same thing every once in a while. It feels kind of like a dream. It was a great acquisition for us during this time when, you know, a lot of things that's going on in the world with the health crisis. It's been a nice escape to know that we have Tom Brady. You know, it's 2 weeks ago today that, you know, the legal tampering or the negotiation period started when we made the first call to his agent. And it seems like 2 months ago now. But when we made the first call at 12 o'clock and he said, "You made a good decision to call," we knew that we might have a very good chance of getting him.
And just take us through it from there, as much as you can tell us about how that process worked.
Well, we spent a lot of time this offseason, as soon as the season ended, meeting, evaluating every quarterback, every player, like we always do, but especially quarterbacks that we thought, you know, that could be potential UFAs. Coaches, my scouts, did an in-depth, very detailed work on all of them and planning on all of them, which one of them could potentially help us and upgrade us at the position. And Bruce made it clear in some interviews that Tom Brady was one, and we did not leave Jameis Winston out of the plan. As soon as Wednesday rolled around and we were able to talk to Tom Brady, we had a great conversation, Bruce and I. We talked to him for over an hour and a half, and he made it clear in the conversation that he was very, very interested. It was almost like a recruitment on his part, telling us why it would make sense for him to come to Tampa Bay. And the following day we signed him, but it was at that phone call that we realized that we felt like, you know, we had him.
There've been a lot of conversations, of course, about his advanced age. He'll be 43 when the season begins. And some of the numbers from a year ago, some will attribute it to not having a lot of weapons. What did the tape show you relative to his arm and what you feel he has left right now?
Well, the tape to us showed that he had plenty of arm. And in fact, we thought that he had, you know, an ideal arm for Bruce in his system. He can still throw it deep. We felt like the mobility was still the same as he's always had, which he's never been able to outrun anybody. But he certainly is mobile, good in the pocket in terms of eluding pressure and with his poise and his instincts. We did not see a decline in his arm talent whatsoever. And in fact, we feel like, you know, he could still play for over 2 years for us, and hopefully that's the case.
One other thing I'd like to ask you about, another unrestricted free agent, of course, is Antonio Brown. And your coach had some pretty strong comments about him last week, but I would ask you about your thoughts on Antonio Brown and any possibility that he's someone you might look at.
Well, we feel like there's a lot of teams that are struggling to find one really good receiver, and we have two really outstanding receivers in Mike Evans and Chris Godwin. Right now, you know, there's only so much money that can go around. There are no plans to sign any other receiver at this time. Antonio is somebody Bruce has come out and had some words about, and Bruce knows him better than all of us. So right now, I would just say that we're focused on other areas of our team.
Fair. And then the other thing, as you focus on the areas of your team, you still look to improve. The draft is coming up a few weeks away. And I would just ask you, as one in the chair, In what specific ways is this year's draft preparation different based upon all that we're dealing with here with the coronavirus? How is it specifically impacting someone in your position?
Well, we're all affected by this. It's the norm is no longer the norm. This is the new norm. And, you know, I'll say that there's, you try to find some advantages to any situation. I'm obviously working alone here. I'm not with my staff. We're using a lot of Zoom, a lot of FaceTime, a lot of phone calls back and forth. But at least for me, I've been able to sit and watch a lot of tape more than I normally would at this time. Also be able to pick up the phone and call prospects. It seems like I'm a little bit more in tune to the draft this year than I ever have been, not relying where I have to rely on my staff, which is a great staff, by the way. Maybe they're not so happy that I'm a little bit more hyper-focused on it. But, no, it's you know, we'll make the best out of it. And, you know, there's not a lot of knocks on my door besides my kids. So it's fewer and far between than it would be if I was in the office. So there are some aspects to this that I'm kind of enjoying.
All right. Well, listen, Jason, first and foremost, stay healthy and best to you and your family. Congratulations on the enormous acquisition, and we will see you down the road. Good luck with the draft.
Well, congratulations to you, too. Brady's no longer in your division. And so we felt like you might like that, too.
Yes, I appreciate that very much. Thank you very much. On behalf of all Jet fans, thank you very much. Jason Light, general manager of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I asked that last question about the draft preparation because you probably heard about this, and we reported it Friday, that Roger Goodell sent a memo to all the teams about the draft saying that it's going to go forward as scheduled. And I want to read you part of that memo here because Goodell said public discussion of issues relating to the draft serves no useful purpose and is grounds for disciplinary action, basically making it clear that no one should come out and be criticizing the league. No one from inside should be criticizing them for going forward. And it went on, but that's the most important part of it. I have very little time. He went on to talk about how we all understand that there's a lot of time that we don't know when we're going to be able to get back to business. You understand the point of this. And Marcus and Dan, I wanted to make this point today because I heard people being critical of Goodell for this. And the only question I would have is why? Why in the world would you criticize him? It serves absolutely zero purpose for any person within the National Football League to be criticizing the league for making the only decision it possibly could under the circumstances. And he's sitting here talking about, we have no idea that if we postpone this 2 weeks or 4 weeks or anything like that, that the circumstances would be any different. We managed to go through free agency and it worked out fine. You got a bunch of people who are suggesting, well, I don't get to do my psychological evaluations of these 21-year-old guys and ask them if they still wet the bed, which happens, by the way, not the bedwetting, but the questioning of that. I found it stunning that anyone would criticize Goodell for laying that out there as firmly as he did. Do either of you guys have a thought on that?
Go ahead, Dan.
Yeah, Greeny, I think for general managers, do your job. Like, stop making do your jobs. Whatever you had a player in ranked in the fall, probably go off that. What was he on tape? Here's a clue. If the quarterback completes a bunch of really good passes, he's probably pretty good. If the defensive back gets a bunch of interceptions, he's probably good. And if the offense moves the defense a bunch, they're...
We're losing Dan's signal there just a little bit. Let's go to Marcus here quickly. Danny, I'm sorry. We're losing the signal a little. We'll come back to you. Go ahead, Marcus. What do you think?
There are two parts to this. And I don't want to minimize the evaluation process that goes on in the NFL. We're not talking about just the first round guys or the guys that everyone is sure about. We're talking about fringe guys for some of these teams that their pro day and the whole evaluation process was going to determine if they were going to get a shot on these teams. In no way am I being critical of Roger Goodell going forward with the draft. But to sit here and act like it doesn't change everything about the evaluation process, I'm not talking about Fatua and Joe Burrow and Chase Young and Isaiah. I'm not talking about those guys. I'm talking about guys at HBCUs that aren't shown on television every day. Guys at lower tier small colleges that don't have an opportunity to be in front of these scouts outside of going to their pro day or some camps or whatever the NFL is putting on around these certain areas. That's who this is going to hurt. So that's the issue that I have with it.
Yeah.
But I'm not critical of Goodell putting this in process now.
All right. We have to leave it there for the moment. We will come back to this as we go. Meanwhile, I have a motorsports update for you this morning. It's brought to you by Mother's Polish and the O'Reilly Auto Parts 125 from virtual Texas Motor Speedway was run yesterday, part of NASCAR's iRacing Pro Invitational Series. And we're going to take you right to the finish. Timmy Hill trying to hold off Ryan Preece, who went on the inside, but it was not enough. Hill crossing the line for the win. And Hill is the winner of the O'Reilly Auto Parts 125, doing the burnout from the comfort of his own home. As we continue, the Dolphins have the fifth pick in the draft. Dan will tell us exactly why they have to move up to get the man they want. Next, Get Up on ESPN.